So, I need you to do me a favor. Close your eyes. Seriously, close them. And I want you to think about what you want most right now. Now, be honest with yourself. You don't have to share it with anybody else, even the one sitting next to you. But just think about what you want most in the world right now, 9:15 on a Sunday morning. Right, once you've got it, open your eyes. For some of us, this might be kind of high. I want the mortgage paid off. I want the promotion at work. I want that person that I want to pay attention to me, to pay attention to me. I want my kids to come back to church. Others, it might be a little more banal. I want a donut. I want my kid to stop fussing. I want Father to show up at Mass more than once a month. The trouble is that the things that we want most are often not those which make us most happy. About 30 years ago, Stephen King had a novel called Needful Things. And the title came from this gospel, right? The King James translation of this gospel says, Mary has chosen the one thing needful. And I like that word needful. It's old-timey. We don't use it anymore. But it helps grasp what this necessary thing that Jesus is talking about means. It's not just necessary like in a kind of practical way. It's full of need. Right? It's a need that's like absorbing, all-encompassing, totally focusing kind of need. And in the novel, what happens is a shop opens up on the town square, and people begin to stumble in, as happens when a new shop opens, and they discover inside sort of curiosities, right? Little trinkets that they didn't even know they wanted. A baseball card from your favorite player when you were a little boy. Or a piece of wood that's supposedly from Noah's Ark, or whatever. Trinkets and chintzes that you didn't know you wanted, but once you see it, you can't stop thinking about it. You gotta have it. And so the people would try and buy it, but the proprietor, he wouldn't just let you buy it. He wanted something from you. And so what he starts having the people do is play these sort of tricks and make mischief on one another that ultimately creates this huge conflict in the town. They saw something they wanted, and they came to want it so much, they'd give up anything for it. Anything at all. They wound up undoing themselves for the thing they thought they wanted. The thing that in the end wouldn't make them happy at all. So now the second question is, right, that thing you thought of a minute ago that you want more than anything else in the world, that thing you want so badly, what would you give to have it? A dollar? $5? 45 more minutes of mass? What would you give to have your student loans paid off all at once? That didn't work. What would you give to have your kids come back to church? Your family finally be at peace? What would you give to have your marriage finally be everything you always dreamed of it being? Or to have a kid grow up and become a priest? What would you give? What would you give? The reading, the story of Martha and Mary and their brother Lazarus, it's familiar to us all, right? But the church pairs it this weekend very intentionally with that passage from the book of Genesis. Now, that passage from the book of Genesis is weird, right? Abram sees the three men, and he runs out to greet them, but he calls them sir. He calls them, who are three, one sir. This is not about pronoun preference. He's making a statement. And it's a statement that hopefully we can see. The narrator even clues us into what's happening. And the Lord revealed himself to Abram thus. This is a theophany. It's a manifestation of God. This is the only time in the Old Testament that God is made manifest in personages. Otherwise, you know, the narrator might say, and God revealed himself thus, and there's a voice, or there's a sign, but this is the only time that people show up, or creatures show up. Many of us have seen the famous icon by Rublev. We've got it in our own dining room next door at the rectory, right? Of the three guys sitting at the table, sort of shadows of wings behind them, the three angelic visitors. This is why the author of the letter to the Hebrews later says, right, that some of it entertained angels unawares. But these are not angels. Or if they are, it's the angels that moved the bits around so that we could see. God came to Abram's house for dinner. And Abram, he does something pretty remarkable. We know that he has servants because he uses them elsewhere. But Abram washes the visitor's feet. Abram kills the fatted calf. Abram serves them himself at table. The reason that's important is because God came to dinner at Abram's house, and Abram became the servant. In Christ Jesus, God came to dinner at the holy house at Bethany with Martha and Mary and Lazarus. God came to dinner. Martha served him food. Mary, listen to him speak. Now, I've been to dinner at many of your homes. I've been in probably close to most of your homes at this point. And you've treated me well. You've extended me real hospitality, right? You've not washed my feet, which is probably best for both of us. But you've sat me down at table and you've poured me something to drink. And we visited and talked. And, you know, because my mama taught me, right? I've at least offered to help with the dishes. But something else is happening here, and I'd put solid money, maybe not our littlest ones here, but anyone of much age, anyone who's even been taught how to treat a guest when they come into the house, we all know what this is like. There are times that a guest comes in, and we are so Martha'd that we can't even pay attention to the guest. We're fussing with food and drink and dishes and plates and music and whatever else, right? But there are other times where you sit at the table with the guest and you catch eyes and something magical happens between the two of you. This is the real reason for the rule of hospitality. It's what happens in communion when we enter into the life of another. That's why we bother to gather and do what we do. So when Mary sat at the feet of Jesus and caught his eye, in some mysterious way, she and her sister ceased being host for the Lord, and he began to host them himself. He may not have done the dishes or made any of the food, but he managed to feed them that night, even as he manages to feed us this morning, with food and drink that will endure forever. Whatever you answer to the question in the beginning, and I'll be honest, I'm pretty distracted by getting a dog sitter right now, but whatever you answered to that question at the beginning, consider this. If your one thing needful is anything less than what happens right here, it ain't good enough. And it sure isn't worth your soul. But if you're willing to give yourself up, all of you, every little bit, for this, and for the one who longs to eat and drink at your table, then you'll live forever.